We'll call the meeting of the trustees to order. Again, I would like to remind everyone to clearly speak into the microphones that are close to you so that everyone can hear what you have to say. Trustee Houck, will you please convene the Committee on Finance?
Okay, thank you, Herb. The meeting on Committee on Finance is convened. We've got one consent item. If there's no objection, we'll deem the consent item adopted. We're going to reorder the agenda here a little bit this morning. If you look in your agenda book, we're going to start with item 5 and go through 5, 6, 7, and 8, and then come back to what everybody is here interested in, come back to the budget situation and tuition issue. I think we can run through these four items fairly quickly, so we're going to start there. We'll start with 5. 5 is the lottery budget. We had Robert presented that the last time. This time it's for action. What do you want to add, Robert?
Well, what I want to add is we basically have a stable budget because our estimates of lottery receipts statewide are not indicating that they're growing. The biggest change is that we are designating $5 million to provide for financial aid for the Early Start program. Other than that, it's pretty much similar to prior year budgets.
Okay. Any questions on this? I need a motion from a member of the committee and a second.
Second.
All right. It's moved and seconded. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That takes care of that. And by the way, we have two speakers. I'll deal with the two speakers when we finish these items. So let's move to item 6. This is related to our revenue bond program. Ben, are you doing this? Where's George? Okay. You moved over on me, George.
Thank you, Chair Hub. This is the Sonoma University Center. Board approval is requested to authorize system-wide revenue bonds and the issuance of bond anticipation notes in the aggregate not to exceed amount of $60,570,000 to provide financing for the Sonoma University Center supported financially by several campus partners, including Sonoma State Housing Program, Associated Students, Inc., Sonoma Student Union Corp., and Sonoma State Enterprises. The not to exceed par value of the proposed bond is based on the estimated total project of $62 million, with program reserve contribution of $8.97 million. Additional net financing costs are about $7.5 million to be funded from the bond proceeds. The campus housing program will have primary responsibility for the project and administer appropriate agreements with MOUs to ensure reimbursement by other campus programs. The campus has received good construction bids and anticipates start of construction in December of 2011 with construction completion in September of 2013. The campus financial plan projects a program net revenue debt service coverage of 1.20 in the first year of operations of 2014-15, which exceeds the benchmark of 1.10. The campus overall net revenue debt service coverage for the first full year of operations is projected to be 1.27, which is below the benchmark of 1.35. However, all campus programs are expected to improve to meet the benchmark in 2014-15 through reduced operating expenditures, therefore effectively increasing the revenues. Approval of this financing resolution is recommended by staff at this time.
Okay, George, thank you. Ruben, do you want to add anything to this?
It is a project that has been in the planning for the last 10 years, and we look forward to have it. It will complete the student services part of the campus.
And you're okay with the financing?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
All right, it's moved and seconded. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, let's move to item 7.
I'll do that one.
Okay, Ben, this is related to an auxiliary organization at Cal State LA.
Yes, sir. Cal State LA is seeking the dissolution of its University Development Corporation, or UDC. It's an auxiliary organization of Cal State LA. The auxiliary was established in 2008 to acquire and develop property and to develop and maintain affordable workforce housing. However, as pointed out in the agenda item, the functions to be performed by UDC were assumed by other existing auxiliary organizations, and the UDC was never formed. UDC, therefore, has no assets and no liabilities, and the campus is seeking its dissolution.
All right, hooray for that. Any questions on this? I need a motion. All right, it's moved. Second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Item 8 is also a dissolution at Cal Poly Pomona. And Ben, take it away.
That's correct. Cal Poly Pomona seeks dissolution of the Cal Poly Pomona Educational Trust. That's an auxiliary of the campus that was incorporated in 1994. The sole purpose of that auxiliary was the management of endowment funds. As explained in the agenda item, the trust was awarded a large grant, and that would have involuntarily converted it from a public charity to a private foundation. And that would have resulted in adverse tax consequences for the grantor and other potential donors. The trust then sought to change its status from a public charity to a functionally integrated Type 3 supporting organization. That change would have enabled the trust to receive large contributions without the negative tax consequences. However, during the process, it became apparent that the change was not likely to be approved by the IRS. So Cal Poly operates the Cal Poly Pomona Foundation, Inc., which is a functionally integrated Type 3 organization, and it can receive large donations without the tax consequences. Moreover, the foundation had previously managed the endowment funds until they were transferred to the trust. Now, the trust has no employees, and the administrative services are performed by the foundation. The cost to operate the trust include things like the financial audit and tax returns, preparation of the financial statements, etc. So dissolution will reduce the expenditures by approximately $75,000 annually. So for these reasons, the campus is seeking dissolution. And Provost and Bohr may want to comment in President Ortiz's absence.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben. Actually, I think you did such a great job of explaining the issues here that I really don't have much to add. In a sense, we're just a victim of our own success in the comprehensive campaign. We've raised a lot of money, including, as you point out, some very large gifts, and that has tax consequences. Thank you.
Okay. The only question I had reading this is, what happened to the Kellogg money?
The Kellogg money, the part we've gotten so far is in the UET and would be transferred to the foundation. And the rest is pledges, and those pledges are the Kellogg Foundation has made clear that they will convert that pledge to a pledge to the Cal Poly Pomona Foundation.
Yeah, which I'm not going to ask this question, but I asked it of Ben. When all is said and done, the question I had was, why did you create this thing to begin with?
Since you had
the Cal Poly Foundation.
Mm-hmm. It was a way to bring donors and prospective donors into the university, and it's been successful in that sense. But most of those people are now either on the Cal Poly Pomona Foundation itself or on our National Development Council. So they're still involved in the university in other ways.
Okay. Any questions? Any? Need a motion on the resolution. All right, it's moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. We'll move now to the two speakers, and then we'll move into the budget and tuition issue. The first speaker is Michael Clemson. Michael, are you here?
Hello. Good morning. My name is Michael Clemson. I work here at the Chancellor's Office, but I come here as a former student. I won't rehash the terrible burden that these fee increases put on students, and I won't rehash the value that affordable and accessible higher education creates for the state of California. There are people here whose stories can do that better than my numbers can. I'm here to say that the California State University is being systematically dismantled and destroyed. Outside, giant marionettes of the chancellor are hanging high, and signs exploring the curious connection between the word greed and read show that we've inadequately explained where these fee increases come from. That each year the legislature cuts the budget. That each year students and faculty send on the university to protest, and each year we don't tell this story. That story, of course, is the state government no longer on our side. Governor Brown ran a platform preserving higher education in California and failed to live up to that promise. That story is of a $650 million cut that passed with the help of 26 legislatures hosting from districts hosting our universities. That story is of a system divided, that instead of working together, students and faculty fight against the chancellor's office. We are forced to defend budget cuts that we're not responsible for when the real fight lies against the legislature, who no longer sees higher education as a priority for the state. We need to better tell that story, and not just in trustee meetings, and not just in press releases to newspapers students don't read. We have to directly engage the students on campus and in person. We have to explain these challenges that we all face together and how we cannot succeed alone. We need to point to the Capitol and unequivocally ask, this is your government. Are they truly working for you? Thank you for your time.
Okay, Mike, thank you. Peter Matthews. Tell us who you are, Peter.
Okay, can everybody hear me okay? Thank you so much, Chancellor and Lieutenant Governor and other members of the Board of Trustees. My name is Peter Matthews. I teach political science at Cypress College. I've also taught at Cal State Fullerton. I've been at Cypress for 25 years as a tenured professor. But I'm here because I'm here to defend the needs and rights of our students to have equal access. Governor Pat Brown had a vision, and he was able to bring that vision into practice, as was the legislature and the governors in previous times, where there was tuition-free education in California. Almost all of Europe has tuition-free education today. We need to go back to that vision of Governor Pat Brown. Thomas Jefferson once said, "I know of no safer repository of power than the people themselves. If on occasion the people take the wrong decision, we must not take power away from the people, but we must inform them toward the right decision. Educate them, inform them, educate them." Thomas Jefferson set up the first public university, University of Virginia, to allow working-class students to have equal opportunity with wealthy students. This is the Golden State, folks. I moved here from Texas 35 years ago. When I first started teaching up in Northern California at Foothill College and City College of San Francisco, my students paid $6 for all 15 units of community colleges. Governor Schwarzenegger paid $6 at Santa Monica College in the 70s for all 15 units. Governor Pete Wilson went to UC Berkeley Law School in the 1950s and paid $37 for all 15 units at a law school. That would be $200 today at UC Berkeley, folks, and $24 at the community colleges. I'm here to present an initiative which we co-wrote with Dr. Paul Garber, who went to UCLA Medical School. Garber and I wrote the initiative which would actually tax crude oil coming out of our ground and also from offshore of California, 15% tax on crude oil and natural gas, to bring in almost $4 billion in today's $100 per barrel price. That would give $560 million to all the CSUs to be able to share and bring down the price of college tuition for our CSU students. UCs would get about $405 million, community colleges at $1.4 billion, and K-12 $1.3.5 billion. That's a lot of money, and I believe the oil companies need to pay a fair share, and I'm going to talk to them reasonably. We all are. The Rescue Education California group, which I head, will meet with the oil companies. We've already tried to, and they will meet with them and reason with them that education is too important, a human right, to be given up to a lack of foresight. And we love you guys. The Board of Trustees can't do a whole lot as long as there's no money. We don't want to fight against the administration. We don't want to fight against administrators like presidents and chancellors. But the faculty and the chancellors and students have to come together to bring back the funding by passing this initiative, which begins signature gathering at the end of this month. We have 5 months to get 500,000 signatures on the tax oil to fund education. Please join us. My friend Marius is here, Marius Lakeman, Cal State student, who couldn't get a class that he needed. He had 15 units. He got cut back to 12 this semester. That's just not right for people like Marius and others. So I'm here to tell you, we are with you. Let's work together for this great golden state of California. Bring back this college tuition lower to what it used to be. Equal, and let's make it free for community colleges and lower for Cal State and UCs so we can educate the best doctors and engineers and lawyers and critical thinkers and literary people, because that's very important in showing us how to think. Thank you so much. I have a little daughter coming. She'll be born in 2 weeks, Paige O'Mara. She'll be 18 years old in 18 years. I want her to be able to go to UC Berkeley and afford it. Thank you so much, and God bless you. Peter Matthews, Rescue Education California. Thank you. We have a copy here. We have a copy of the proposition, the initiative right here, the legal wording. It'll be outside as you go out. We'll let you pick it up, okay? Thank you so much. I'll be back to teaching at 9:30. I have my class coming up at Cypress. Take care, guys.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
All right. We're back to the agenda. Item one is related to the current 11-12 budget. Robert?
Yes. Item one is actually an information item. It's the annual student fee report that lays out in some detail how the fees have changed in last year at campus-based fees and also system-wide. There's some, I'm sure you've had a chance to review the agenda material and the tables that have the detail. Basically, it's no surprise, system-wide, the tuition fee, we had a $1,032 increase for undergraduates, occasioned by a $650 million cut from the state. This $1,032 increase generates only net revenue of about $300 million to match up against that $650 million cut. So we lost ground considerably in terms of resources. As far as campus-based fees go, the average campus-based fee went up by $97, which was around 10%, and mostly a result of construction or expansion of student recreation centers or student union buildings, also the implementation of a mental health services fee at some campuses.
Okay, any questions? All right, moving right along. Now we're into the 11-12, quickly there, and then we'll go to 12-13 and the tuition issue.
Well, on 11-12, this is information again. It's no secret. We're facing the very real prospect of a $100 million trigger cut that the Department of Finance will have to decide upon by mid-December. There's going to be an early indication of what the state's revenue situation is coming later this morning. At 11:30, the LAO is going to be releasing its fiscal forecast. All I can say is everything that we're hearing is not terribly optimistic on that front.
Okay. Questions? All right. Let's go to the 12-13. Steve.
I think it might be worth just a footnote, because we've talked about this at other meetings about how the system's already prepared to handle what we hope will not be this trigger cut of $100 million. But I think given that everybody wasn't here the last time, maybe a short summary might be appropriate.
Thank you. I have worked with the presidents. We are anticipating a $100 million reduction. And we have no plan to raise tuition to cover this $100 million cut. So from their, campuses not doing things, not buying things, from whatever reserves they've had, some of the projects they're going to postpone, we will not have to raise tuition to get through this next semester. Now, the big issue about the $100 million trigger cut is whether or not it is one time or continuing. I know that UC and we are working with finance and the governor's office to make it a one-time cut, not a continuing cut, and that would really help us out.
So that is in addition to the $650, so the if that were to occur, it's a total of $750 million. That's
almost 30% of our operating budget year over year reduced.
Right. Okay. Any other? Thank you for pointing that out, Steve. All right, Robert, go ahead with the 12-13 over. Ben, to start.
Yes, as the Chancellor mentioned, we've been able to cope with these very huge reductions in part by cost-cutting measures such as increased use of technology, restrictions on travel, reductions in hiring, elimination of non-essential purchases of goods and services, organization restructuring, and collaborative efforts across the campuses to reduce duplication of effort and increase efficiencies. The fiscal constraints have forced us to manage down our enrollment and limit class offerings. Moreover, our employees have endured furloughs and gone without increases in compensation. Although we have significantly reduced expenditures, the magnitude of the cuts has caused structural deficits on our campuses and all but eliminated fiscal flexibility. In spite of our efforts to be more efficient, we have found it necessary to increase tuition fees to preserve the quality of our academic offerings and give students the support services they need, deserve, and expect. Now, Robert is going to address the numbers, but I want to take a few minutes to emphasize the themes of the budget proposal before you today. We have built a budget that will enable the university to provide access and an affordable quality education for the citizens of California. It's important to note that we are not requesting funds sufficient to make us whole. Given the fiscal condition of the state, that would be unrealistic. Recent reports from the state controller indicate next year will probably be as difficult as the one we are in today. The request is for what we need to provide access to the CSU campuses and support the quality of educational programs. We're requesting funding for 20,000 students, but that will not fully address the demand we are facing. In this economy and the high unemployment rate in California, more and more people are seeing a need for additional education and the acquisition of new skills. The number of applications to the CSU is soaring. And given the steadily increasing demand, the request to fund 20,000 students is conservative and realistic. The enrollment funding will allow us to serve students and make sure that those who are on our campuses get the courses they need to complete their degree in a timely manner. We're also asking the state to help us invest in the faculty and staff who are keeping our campuses clean, functional, and safe, and making sure our students get the courses, programs, and services they need to succeed. We've not been able to invest properly in our employees for several years, and this is a condition that needs remedy as soon as possible. Additional funds are needed to support our efforts to improve student success, including retention and degree completion, as outlined in Access to Excellence and the Graduation Initiative. And the budget also proposes funds to address the most urgent maintenance needs of our aging physical plants, mandatory costs such as health benefits and energy costs, information technology infrastructure upgrades, and the replacement of instructional equipment that is outdated or has reached the end of its useful life. The budget proposal calls for a $333 million increase in general fund support. And this will enable the university to address our most critical needs and continue providing student access, quality academic programs, and student support services. If the state funds the proposed budget, there will be no need for a tuition increase next year. Without the requested funding, however, our choices are extremely limited. It will be necessary, among other things, to turn away thousands of students, increase class sizes, eliminate low enrollment programs, further reduce the workforce, adjust the investment to our employees, and, yes, increase the tuition fee. And all of those options are undesirable. However, because we do not know for quite some time if the state will fund the proposed budget, we have included a specific line item to show the revenue that would be needed for a tuition fee increase. The amount would be slightly less than $250 per semester per student. And again, if the state fully funds the requests, it will not be necessary to increase the tuition fee. It is prudent, nevertheless, to let students and their families know of the possibility of an increase if the state does not fund the university adequately. Moreover, our campuses need to begin planning the number of students to be admitted and the number of faculty members that will be needed to teach the students. If the state does not fund our request and it becomes necessary to increase the tuition fee, our neediest students, students from households with an income of $70,000 or less, will not be affected. We will continue to set aside one-third of the increase for financial aid. And in addition, we are exploring ways and options to increase grant aid for students from families with incomes that exceed $70,000. We also intend to encourage our students and their families to take advantage of the American Opportunity Tax Credit. And Robert's going to provide additional information on that tax credit in his remarks. The availability of financial aid will mitigate the impact of the tuition fee increase should it become necessary. In summary, the budget proposal is fundamentally about ensuring our ability to give qualified students access to this university, offer quality programs, and give students the support services they require. I'm going to ask Robert now to provide the details of the budget proposal and elaborate on several of the points that I've raised. Robert.
Okay, very well said, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben. And in this slide presentation, we're actually going to be moving back and forth between the issues of Agenda Item 3, the budget, and Agenda Item 4, the tuition increase, because they're so intimately intertwined with each other. So beginning with the first substantive slide.
Which also, by the way, if you want, these slides are in your... Deborah's holding it up. If you want printed copies.
This is probably a familiar-looking slide, but I think it's a good reminder of the context in which we're dealing. The red line are state appropriations to the CSU going all the way back to 1998. And if you look on the right side, right end of the red line, you see that our current appropriation is at $2.14 billion. Trigger goes off, then that drops to $2.04 billion. So even without the trigger going off, the amount of money that the state has provided us this year is less than the amount that they provided 13 years ago. And this is without any adjustment for inflation. These are nominal dollars. Meanwhile, the blue line shows that our full-time equivalent students, California resident full-time equivalent students, has climbed. And we're now serving 58,000 FTES more than we did back in 1998. In terms of headcount, that's probably around 70,000 students. You also see that the blue line reached a peak 4 years ago, and then a very steep decline, which was the onset of the very severe budget cuts that we started receiving from the state, and a necessity, an absolute necessity, to try to manage our enrollments down, as distasteful as that was to have to do. But it's also noteworthy, you see that the blue line begins an upward tick again in the current year versus last year. And that's due to the October surge that we got in the last Schwarzenegger budget, a very late budget decision that restored a lot of the budget cuts, but that also came with a very specific directive from the legislature and the governor to reopen our doors, which we did. Letting in a very large number of transfer students in spring 2010. And those transfer students that we took for one semester in the 10-11 fiscal year are now with us for two semesters in the current year, they put upward momentum on our enrollments. And I'm going to return to this theme later, the fact that we are facing these very, very tremendous pressures upward on FTES. The next slide shows what was supposed to have happened. The red line, again, tracing general fund appropriations, and you can see that in the middle of the graph, between 0405 and 0708, we have a very steady upward trend. Those are the first 3 years of the compact with Governor Schwarzenegger being implemented by the state, and allowed us to do some stable planning and expansion of enrollments. The blue dotted line is what that compact called for going out into the future. But you can see the red line beginning in 0809 drops below. And this is really a fuller measure of the kind of gap that we're facing. If you just measure against where we were in 0708, we're hurting. But if you measure against what was supposed to have happened, what was planned, then you really see the enormity of the fiscal stress that we're facing. I mean, this helps explain why we have, for example, had to hold the line so strenuously on employee salary increases. And it helps explain all the other difficult measures we have had to take. There's a gap there in resources of $1.7 billion. Next slide shows in dollar amounts over the last 4 years. You've got the green line, the light green line is the state's general fund appropriations to us. Almost $3 billion in 0708, now down, flirting with $2 billion with the trigger cut. So you can see that we have fallen in those 4 years in terms of funding from the state, $868 million. Trigger goes off, it'll be $968 million. We've had to respond to that in part with extraordinary tuition fee increases, and but we've also been doing a lot of other things, really on the expenditure side, and these numbers illustrate that. What they show is that the tuition fee revenue that has increased by $593 million, you set that against a $968 million cut, and things are not adding up. Brings us to the next slide. Again, reiterating, $868 million without the trigger, $968 million with it. Annual tuition revenue is now up $593 million. And now here's an invisible but very real effect, mandatory cost increases, particularly in the area, in an area that we have little to no control over, which are the premiums that we pay on employee health care, which are negotiated by CalPERS and which are basically set at a default rate under state law. That $135 million increase in annual costs is a very real impact on our campuses. They have to find a way to make room for it by cutting spending on other program activities.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah.
Identify additionally the elements of mandatory costs beyond the requirement to fund health care for employees.
Beyond that requirement, we have each year buildings coming online that have been newly constructed, classroom, laboratory space, and when those buildings come online, they have to be operated and maintained. That adds we also had the general salary increase that we had to provide the faculty in 2008-09 was an unfunded impact. That was mandatory. We didn't get any funding from the state as we were supposed to. That was about a $30 million annual cost.
And that's an ongoing cost.
It's an ongoing cost, yes. So the bottom line...
And the energy as well.
Energy, yeah. Energy price increases. We do our best to manage that, but it's still an impact. So the bottom line is that in terms of our available resources to teach and serve students... Since 0708, we are in a negative $410 million a year situation. We have $410 million less resources to serve students now than we did 4 years ago. Trigger goes off, that's $510 million less resources.
And Robert, back to the previous slide, but it's here, the $593 million is net financial aid, correct?
Right.
So, I mean,
that's net of financial aid.
There's a third of that that's going straight to university grants. I mean, I think that's...
The $593 million takes into account the fact that we essentially failed to collect one-third of the potential revenue we could collect because we give financial aid instead. Next slide. There is, if I were to identify a theme that is riding on this budget plan, it is student access. And that may sound counterintuitive if you're talking about something that has a tuition increase in it, but I will a little later get into some explanation of why the real problem on access is on the supply side rather than the demand side. The supply side being our ability to supply courses, to supply admission slots, to supply services. But this budget plan that we are presenting to you means, in the first case, admission for 20,000 additional high school graduates and community college students than we could admit if we don't have resources. The resources also provide what I call meaningful access to all of our students, over 400,000 students. It's not very meaningful to admit somebody and then they can't get the courses and the services they need to move in a timely way towards graduation. That is a struggle for us, but it's a struggle that means something very real to all of our students, and we need resources to provide that. And the resources mean improved student success. Our graduation initiative, that requires resources. And right now, campuses are basically robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to carry out some of these extra support services for the students. They are using one-time resources to cover what should be recurring costs and needs, and it is just not a sustainable situation. So our next slide. Yes.
Robert, that 20,000 students, the community college transfers, that includes estimates that are going to be the SB 1440 wave that we're going to get?
Yeah, SB 1440 is just one new pressure point. And it's actually, you know, we should be welcoming the opportunity to carry out this important state objective. But we can't do it without some resources. This is the pie chart that shows that in our budget plan, we have proposed a year-to-year increment of spending of $397 million. And this shows how it's divided up. And I think it reinforces the theme that this is a budget that's about student access. More than half of the $397 million is directly related to that. We have nearly 40% of the budget is penciled in for the costs of accommodating enrollment growth. That's the cost of adding additional course sections. That's the cost of adding additional student support staff to provide services. Almost 15% of this budget plan is for the graduation initiative and other efforts to improve student success. So right there, those two are directly connected to students. But there are other things that are in this plan that also are serving students, even if indirectly, and they're very important. You heard yesterday about a huge backlog of facility maintenance needs. We are proposing here to increase the annual spending on maintenance by $30 million. That just barely gets us moving in the right direction again. But it's vital that we start to do things because these are the facilities that students are taking their classes in and taking their labs in, and they need to be serviceable and safe. The upgrade of the infrastructure on information technology is also largely driven by student demands for additional connectivity and IT services on campuses. Also, something that's not very sexy but is awfully important, instructional equipment replacement. In the last 4 years of fiscal crisis, campuses have had to neglect that, and yet this is the equipment that is in the labs that the students have to use to do their work. Yesterday, we had a tour with some legislative staff of Long Beach campus, and they got a chance to see the condition of some of this instructional equipment. Long Beach has a newly constructed science hall, brand new building, but you walk into the labs and you look at equipment that is clearly half a century old. And so this, again, very important, but it's not the kind of thing that, you know, you read about in the newspapers. So, and then I think last but not least, and Dr. Quillian mentioned the fact that we have not been able to properly address the compensation needs of our faculty and staff because of this ongoing fiscal crisis. A lot is being asked of them. In 2009-10, everyone took what amounted to a 10% cut in pay. It is important that we pay attention to that side of the equation, and so the budget does provide for a compensation pool increase. Next slide. This slide is a reminder of why it's so important for us to do everything we can to accommodate these enrollment pressures. This is about the economic and social future of California. This graph comes from a study that was done by the Public Policy Institute of California that identified that by the year 2025, under current trends, the state of California is going to be a million short of trained workers with bachelor degrees needed for our 21st century economy. This is, I think, one of the most pressing issues facing the state of California and its future. And it ties right in to what this budget is trying to do, which is to try and start generating that additional access. The CSU generates half the bachelor degrees that are produced in this state. And if we can't keep up that pace, then the entire state of California is going to suffer as a result. Next slide shows what this growing pressure for access is. This shows for about the last decade what our applications have been. First-time freshmen, also the red part are transfers, community college transfer applications, and the top of the bar graduate applications. You can see that the number of applications rising steadily. In 2009-10, we have this real downdraft. That downdraft is not a reflection of demand. That's a reflection of the fact that budget cuts forced us to close our spring applications. So that's a supply constraint that knocks that bar down. But 10-11, now you see our applications are at a record high. Next slide, just a couple of bullet points that indicate that this increasing wave of demand for access to the CSU is happening even though we have been increasing tuition fees. And there are a lot of reasons why that is logical and not surprising, which I'll get into. And it's a bullet point mentioning the fact that we had to shut off the spring. The next slide, again, we have other pressures from various policy initiatives, important policy initiatives like the graduation initiative and early start. Those are terribly important initiatives, but if they're and as they become successful, it's going to increase the number of lower division students, particularly freshmen, who we retain into the second and hopefully third and fourth years. As those retention rates go up, so does our FTES. And the effect can be quite dramatic. Increases in required course taking and completion, especially under low among underrepresented and low-income students, to reduce time to degree, all of this increases our FTES. The next slide has a couple of graphs. In fact, we shared this with the board at the board retreat. The one on the left shows that the average unit load that students are taking is climbing. Now, this is actually a good thing. It is a reflection of a trend that should result in improved time to degree. And in part, it's a response by students to rising sticker price. There is a motivating factor here that is under our tuition structure where you can take extra units without having to pay extra for it. It becomes much more logical to increase your unit load. You can also see what's happening with our retention numbers. They're starting to swing back up, which is, again, just what we want to have happen, but, again, it causes upward FTES pressure. The next slide mentions some additional policy pressures on FTES. We talked about SB 1440 and this new pathway with the AA transfer degree. There's also an effect that we're seeing, that is that inability to get courses in the community colleges is making our campuses more attractive. And then here's another interesting thing. UC tuition is starting to make CSU campuses look more and more attractive. You know, we hear a lot about, there's a lot that gets reported about comparing us to UC just in terms of percentage-wise, how much things are going up. But on a student basis, and students pay in dollars, they don't pay in percentages, UC's tuition has gone up in the last 4 years per student more than twice the amount that ours has, and their fee levels are more than twice ours. That we're actually seeing evidence of students starting to make the choice to come to CSU as a result. Our next slide just follows up on that, and this shows in dollar amounts what the tuition fees are at the two systems. And you can see that the gap for an undergraduate student between the two systems has now grown to $6,720. Next slide is, again, something that was shared at the board retreat, and it indicates that, and here we're talking about the number of admissions and new enrollments that we have. This is a reflection not of demand. This is a reflection of supply constraints. This is a reflection of the enrollment management that we've had to engage in, and the fact that we now have impaction or that is higher admission criteria requirements, at least in some programs, at 16 of our 23 campuses. And then the next slide, again, another way of looking at these pressures. The blue line showing what happened, including recent declines, that again were supply constraints, that is, inadequate funding forced that. The red line showing what demographic projections would have indicated should have happened. The next slide are just a few bullet points that show that in putting this budget together, thinking about next year, fall of 2012, and really the entire 12-13 fiscal year, we really are running out of options. We cannot hold our FTES level anymore. We're already on an upward swing. We've talked about these growing pressures. We have impaction in place, as I said, at 16 campuses, and our FTES is still growing in spite of that. It's not feasible to hold the FTES at the current state-supported level. And even if we could, it would be harmful in terms of access for students. It would be harmful to our campuses, and it would be harmful to state policy objectives. Reduction in our workforce has reached a practical limit in terms of quality and service to students. We have 10% fewer people working for us today than we did.
Hang on, Robert. Henry?
Now, on that point of not being able to hold our level FTEs, again, it's kind of counterintuitive. If I'm looking at, you know, a reduction in support, but we keep growing, so why can't we? I mean, I know it's a state institution, but why can't we? I mean, again, these are not dollar and cents reasons. These are more policy reasons that I'm seeing.
Well, if we go back to the previous slide, we'll see that starting with the 08-09 fiscal year, we actually did drop our enrollment. We dropped it quite sharply. But it has reached a point now, and that's the blue line. The red line is showing what the demography calls for. So the blue line has reached a point in its downward path that we cannot drive it any farther down.
If I could add to that, the strategies to drop enrollment usually affect diversity. And usually as you increase your criteria for admissions, you affect your underrepresented classes, and that is counter to the mission of the CSU.
So, in other words, impaction at 16 of our campuses allowed us to drop now things are back on an upward slope because the legislature directed us to open spring 2010 for the community college transfers. But also from the standpoint of the people of this state and the needs of students, we can't keep driving that blue line down anymore without causing really tremendous harm. And so that's really where Yeah, we have tough choices to make, but if you're thinking about impacts on access, the impacts on access are overwhelmingly on the side of our inability to provide the services and the classes because of inadequate resources. It isn't the sticker price that is actually dominating the access side of things.
Robert, we need to keep. Let's move through this.
Let's move.
I think you've made the point.
Okay, so I will ask that we go there and move there. You know about this. We have pushed efficiency hard, but we were efficient to begin with. That's what this slide is about. Half of the large universities in the country that are the lowest spending. per student are CSU campuses. I'm not sure that's something to be proud of, but it is an indicator that we are doing our job very efficiently. Next slide. Brings to the point that it's the supply side, not the demand side, that is denying access. And then the next slide this is from the agenda item. What it lays out is that part of our budget plan is this idea of a moderate tuition increase for an undergraduate, less than $500 per academic year. But the budget plan also has an opportunity for the state to provide the $138 million of replacement revenue that would allow us to not have to implement this. The next slide is a reminder of the tremendous array of financial aid options that allow us to protect neediest students from tuition increases. Our state university grant, which is where we do not collect revenue that we otherwise could, because we basically give a pass to the needy student, has now climbed to over $600 million. The next slide shows that if you look at the whole array of grants and tax credits, we have $2 billion in available financial aid for CSU students. And this is not counting subsidized loans. $700 million of Pell grants, over $600 million state university grants, $350 million in Cal grants, $270 million in a relatively new federal tax credit, $54 million in fee waivers. This is why we are able to completely shield from our tuition increases 45% of our undergraduates. And the next slide is one that deserves a little bit of focus, because this is a relatively new and little known part of the higher education equation, and that's the American Opportunity Tax Credit that started in 2009. It's a offset that's worth up to $2,500 per student, available for families that make up to $180,000 a year. A U.S. Treasury Department study for the first tax year that it was available showed that 1 million California households claimed this credit and lowered their taxes by $1.5 billion. And this thing is, there was an article in Inside Higher Education today, which only higher education insiders read, but it labeled this as invisible spending for financial aid. There's been very little discussion in the larger media about this tax credit and its impacts. And its impacts are focused heavily on middle incomes. In our system, it focuses almost entirely on students from households between $70,000 and $180,000. Because students who are in less than $70,000 are getting a grant, and the IRS subtracts that grant from eligibility for the tax credit. So you're not eligible for the tax credit if you're getting a Pell grant or a state university grant. But the 55% of our students who actually are paying the sticker price, a majority of them are potentially eligible for this credit, and we estimate that 39% of CSU students and families have already taken advantage of this, and we believe that the average value is around $2,000 based on the income study on the benefit that was in the U.S. Treasury Department study. Total value, $270 million for middle-income students. Chancellor.
A couple things. If a family happens to have two kids in college, they can get $4,000. At the retreat, you really woke us up, and I really appreciate the questions that you ask us to go do research. And one of the things that we found was what this program is doing. This program, the tax credit program, has turned into the second largest financial aid program in the United States. Pell is the largest, and it's about $30 billion. But this program last year spent $18 billion and is growing rapidly. And as you know, Robert said, some people call it the invisible financial aid. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to, from a communication standpoint, just paper over all of our families and make sure that they know that. Number two, I am also considering something else based on the retreat. I would like to see every student have to sign up for financial aid when they apply. And that will help us make sure that we're getting the full Pell, the full tax credit, and help us with our Cal Grant program. So this will help the middle class students. Now, you also raised several questions, which we are working on, as I said, that we're going to have to model. I'm going to be talking to the presidents in December about this. I think that we're probably too generous or lenient about our state university grants for students that have taken more than, and I, you know, just here's a number, 140 credit hours towards a baccalaureate degree. We're allowing them to continue up to 180 credits. You know, I'm not sure that makes a lot of difference. The other thing that we need to look at is our state university grants for graduate students. We're the only university in the country that is doing that. Now, we've got to be very sensitive about this and make sure that nursing, teachers, and others, you know, that we can continue to produce the numbers that we need to produce. But once it becomes the individual benefiting more than the society, there's a question about that. That would allow us to expand beyond the $70,000 that you all raised the issue about in our retreat. So we're going to do that. But we think the tax credit is a real opportunity for our students and our families.
Thank you, Chancellor. We're getting very close to the end, Mr. Chair. So the next slide, this again comes out of the agenda item dealing with the student fee report. But what it indicates is that even with the last several years of increases, we are very affordable in terms of our sticker price, and I emphasize sticker price. We're the second lowest on the list that was put together by CPEC years ago. Now, I know with CPEC's demise, we need to revisit this, but at this point, we didn't have a good basis on which to create a new list. This is the list that's been used for comparison for many years. We're the second lowest, more than $2,000 below the average of the comparison. And even in other general comparisons, we're well below national averages for universities. And then the final slide that we have deals with the timing. That is that we have to act now, not only on the budget, but on the tuition portion of this. As much as we would like the governor to be able to find a way in his budget in January to buy out the tuition increase, we think it's incumbent to provide as much notice as possible to students and families of potential tuition increase. And when we have acted later in the cycle in prior years, we've been actually quite severely criticized on the issue of notice. Our continuing students start early registration in April and May, and it's at that point they have to pay what the tuition fee is. The other thing that is critical is the need for our campuses to start making admission decisions at the beginning of December and to start planning what they need for fall 2012 in terms of numbers of faculty, in terms of class schedules. There are even finer points to the planning considerations that I would turn to Executive Vice Chancellor Smith to elaborate upon.
This year, with the advent of early start, we'll be starting students not in August, but we'll be starting over 20,000 incoming freshmen the end of June. So this already crops 2 months off the admission cycle. Therefore, it's important that we start by November 30th, when the admission cycle closes, to immediately process and start accepting students. So by January, we'll send them the early start notification that they have to sit for the ELM EPT exams that we'll be offering February, March, April, and May. Right? Then we get the scores, and then they'll be notified if they need early start. So this is a pretty tight timeline that we're already reducing by 2 months because of early start.
Okay. I think it's time to go to questions from the board. Thank you, Robert and Ben and Ephraim. Questions from the board. Steve, I know you had... All right, well, let's go to Henry. Did you want to get on? All right, Henry, Steve, and then we'll go to Jillian. And Melinda then after that.
Well, one question is on this budget, does that include the fee increase? Is that an assumption in there?
The assumption in the budget is that it will be bought out. But the two things are intertwined. Because if a buyout doesn't happen, then the strategy behind the budget is that we would at least have approximately $200 million in incremental revenues that our campuses could rely on to admit more students and start adding more classes.
Okay, Steve.
Well, and the fact is that no matter what decision we make or when we make it, it's going to be controversial. And there'll be those who will suggest that it could have been done a different way that would have had less impact. So while I appreciate that this is a time that's helpful to make a decision about tuition, you certainly could argue that we've done it other ways in the past. We made a choice on tuition in July. And so it's a catch-22. I think we all recognize that. It's not easy when we go through this process. It just starts today. And that's certainly one of the challenges and frustrations is that while the idea of putting this buyout on tuition forward at some extent makes some sense, we're saying the state should provide those resources, making a decision on tuition right now and not really weighing it against the ultimate budget that we get also puts the board in an awkward circumstance. So all around awkward circumstances. So I guess the other question that, and I don't know if there's really an answer to that question, I think the staff has made it clear that it certainly helps the planning to make these choices now, but it does, maybe you could address the ability of this board to, once we have a clearer picture of what the legislature and the governor have signed as a budget, what is our ability to revisit these choices that are before us today? So we're asking for this package. It's no doubt it's going to be changed substantially, and yet how much are we locked in to the questions about enrollment, 5% enrollment growth being projected? You're saying that we're going to make these admissions decisions over the next few months. Campuses are going to make decisions about how to accommodate these students in the next few months, et cetera. But yet, when do we as a board get to come back and review based on the reality, not based on what our best hopes are?
We've already made a decision about our community college transfer students. We made that decision in August and 1st of September. So we're going to admit students this January that are transfer students from the community colleges. As Ephraim said, we will begin after November 30th to, on a rolling basis, admit first-time in college students and some additional transfer students that will be transferring for August of 20, 12. Now, what we would have to do if this doesn't work out is the net-net that we can plan for and we have control ourselves is about $200 million. So we would have to come back, and we'd come back to this board, and then we would take this budget and say to this board, all right, we've got to cut approximately $200 million out of here. Are we going to keep the compensation increases? Are we going to do any maintenance and repair? We know we have to pay the health care cost, so that's not an option for us. Are we going to buy any equipment? Those would be the decisions that we would have to come back to this board.
Chancellor, so but I'm trying to that's very helpful. But what are the decisions that have then by the fact that time has gone by, are irreversible? So if we don't address the issue of enrollment today, and we don't find out until June or July or beyond what that final budget amount is, that seems to be like that's an irreversible decision.
It is.
If we have so that's an example of one. Okay.
It is, and here's the thing, the timing of the legislature is not congruent with the timing that the decisions that we have to make about the academic year. And students apply, and they don't just apply to us, they apply to other institutions. And so they want to hear as soon as they can my son or daughter get into San Diego State? And they want to hear in December or January if they can. We still don't have a budget at all. And we have gone, well, Governor talked about in 2010, we went to October. School started. You know, it's nuts for us to try to figure out how to run this organization based upon the calendar and the decisions that the legislature makes. So, yes, we've got to make those decisions.
Okay, so that's enrollment. And does that also apply to tuition? Now, what's to stop this board from making a tuition decision down the road when things are clear? Why do we have to make one now? And what's the consequences? Are there alternatives to the choices that are before us on that specific issue?
I don't think there are alternatives for us. I don't think that there are any alternatives for us. Because, you know, we want to serve California students with access. And I don't want us to have our campuses in December and January and February turn students down and tell them that they can't get access to a baccalaureate degree any longer. And most of those students are going to be students of color. And I don't want those students to be out on the street. I don't want them, you know, to not have a great opportunity that all of us have had. And so it's important to me that we continue to graduate 98,000 students every spring. And that's what we did last year. And those students are prepared for the workforce. And you saw the chart about California's workforce needs. And the economic needs. I mean, the only way we're going to get out of this downward economic turn is to have the best and the brightest workforce in California.
Just one last follow-up, if I can. It's the issue of timing. That's the one I'm struggling with here, Chancellor. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Could the board say that we may impose a tuition increase of blank, but it's something that a final decision has been made on? Or let me give you another one. We may say that we're going to impose a tuition, but based on final decisions of the board, it might be reduced.
Well, it might be reduced because we are giving an opportunity to the governor and the legislature to buy out 100% of this fee increase.
Or less.
And whatever they do, then, you know, we can come back here and make any adjustment on a net-net basis. So if they buy out half the fee, then, you know, we would have about you know, an annual $250 increase in tuition. But the net-net of the $200 million is the only thing that this board and we can control going forward with making the admissions decisions that we need to make in a timely way.
Thank you, Steve. Jillian.
Hello, everyone. I would like to take a moment to voice my strong opposition to the proposed tuition increase for the 2012-2013 term. The governor's office continues to cut financial support for higher education because of the CSU's ability to increase revenue through raising tuition. But when does this cycle end, and when do we take a firm stance in support of a truly affordable education for our students? I do understand the board's intentions with the tuition buyout plan to solicit general fund support. The plan does directly encourage the state to support higher education in the student circumstance, but it still allows for a potential tuition hike, which I cannot condone. Today, the students need the board of trustees to weaken the cycle of tuition increases and budget cuts for higher education. We need to send a message that students are a priority and that education is essential to the success of California. With that being said, I hope you all take my stance into consideration when casting your vote. I am certain that the right decision will be made in light of our current financial crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Jillian. Melinda.
Thank you. I want to echo some of the comments that were made earlier by Steve, and let me start by, I think my concern, let me repeat something that we discussed a few months ago. We talked about changing the language between fee and tuition, and as a matter of practicality, we have been charging a tuition. I opposed changing that language because in my mind, it was a significant change in the legislative intent behind what this system has been all about. And I make that comment today because when evaluating the issue of managing the system, and I, as a practical reality, understand the numbers that have been presented, the ideas that have been articulated, but it is a significant change in the legislative intent for us to continue in the path of having to be forced to increase fees to a tuition. And I, as I evaluate the issues presented about 20,000 students or more, it troubles me that I think we need to force the legislature to make a decision about what they want to do with higher education before we continue to go down that path. I really believe that to be true. And so now a few questions, because this is not really about applause. This is really about a tragedy in California's history. When we talk about the 20,000 students, when I look at the chart here, what are we looking at? Are we operating under the 331,000 and it's 20,000 more on top of that?
It's about 20,000 headcount on top of the 331,000. The 331,000 is an FTES figure. In terms of FTES, it's an increment of about 16,500. So it would take us up to about 348,000 FTES, which is actually still less than the number we were teaching 3 years ago.
Okay. And then Mr. Mendoza's question really was, if we maintained approximately the 331, and I'm not saying that I'm an advocate for that, but if we did that, what would we be looking at in terms of a fee or tuition increase this year for the next year?
Well, if we were the only circumstance under which we would probably try to do that would be one in which the board rejects the recommended tuition increase. Because the denial by ourselves to ourselves of the resources that we need would force us to have to do some fairly drastic things in terms of admission.
And so, I chatted with one of our student leaders here today, Yvette, and I won't point her out, She's a, I think, a third-year student at CSU Fullerton. She shared with me that she's first-generation college, as I am. She has three siblings at home. We know that if we bring in one, the others will follow. Her 17-year-old brother is at a community college, and I guess we have rolling admissions because he applied to Fullerton and has already received his no letter, regretfully. And she has two other siblings to follow. I asked her, tell me your spin. You know, my daughter's now 27, so I reached below and I said, tell me what your thoughts are on this issue. Because what we really struggle with is the issue of access and allowing these 20,000 additional students to come in versus a fee or a tuition increase. And she said, you know, that's a really hard decision. I understand. But we really want to see the board fight for us more. And I don't want to feel selfish, because when you ask me that way, I want to say, I want to pay more so that maybe my brother will be able to come in. But at the same time, I want to feel like, you know, you guys are doing more. As on the question of timing, have we, to better understand, I think, what Mr. Glazier was asking, did we at one time do conditional enrollment letters, conditional admits? Is there a way for us to send a message and make the decision a little bit later when we have more information, Charlie?
You know, we can do anything that this board wants us to do. That is a bad idea. To send a letter and saying, oh, maybe we're going to wait on the legislature, who's going to end up in June, July, August, to tell you whether you can go to college next year or not, doesn't make any sense, to me, at least. Now, here's another thing. You know, we have made a decision at different points. Whether this board remembers or not, we're currently in court. And we have a $70 million liability because we made a decision late into the spring and where we have been sued. And that is in a court. I don't know what we would do if we end up losing that. So, again, you know, we want to be as early as possible, give everybody as much notice, get the financial aid forms filled out on time so that we don't turn these students away.
But let me just close at least my questions or my comments. I don't think anyone has been as an advocate for access almost as much as I have. Absolutely. And I said it yesterday, I think, in fact, that Latino and African-American students oftentimes start at a community college and get stuck there. It is a dead-end street. From a long-term perspective, however, we have to have the very difficult discussion about what we're doing in California higher ed today. And we continue to react by doing the right thing. We increase the fees so that we can create access and we can bring in the 20,000 students. But we can't continue to crack the nut the same way over and over and over again. It's an ugly cycle. And we have to have a serious discussion about where we're going to spend the money, on what we're going to invest it on in our system, where we're going to have alternative revenue sources. I'm glad and I commend the board that we finally had that discussion a couple of weeks ago. I asked for that discussion in 2005-06. And coincidentally, when we look at the gap, I wish we would have had more foresight then, but we had some good faith belief still the state of California was going to invest in higher ed, and it simply has failed us. So I can't vote in support of this tuition increase, even though, do not applaud, we need it to increase enrollment. But I cannot continue to do that. We need to hold ourselves and the state accountable, and we need to address and evaluate the actual core elements of what we're doing here as an institution before we continue to react. We need to help them make the public policy decisions. And then if we decide as a group after having that dialogue that we're simply going to do it this way, then it will have been done after we have carefully and thoughtfully assessed as a matter of public policy that this is, in fact, the direction we're going to lead. So thank you.
All right. Bernadette.
Thank you. I think I'm going to offer a somewhat different take on some of what I have been hearing around this table. I want to thank Trustee Riddell for a conversation that we had last evening. I came into Long Beach with a pretty much solid opinion on this subject, and our conversation last night gave me pause. So I went back to my hotel room and I read through all the materials on this particular topic again. I then kind of slept on it and got up again this morning and read through them all again. And what I attempted to do was to pull myself back from my position as a trustee and from the knowledge that I might have as a faculty member and so on, and kind of look at it from a more outside point of view. And what struck me when I did that is that this proposal provides some pretty strong rationales for why the legislature and our other elected officials do not need to buy out the tuition increases. It tells them that we have the second lowest tuition of comparison institutions. It says that we are $2,700. It will be $2,700 more before we reach the average of comparison institutions. It makes note of numerous financial aid options that might mitigate costs. I would be pretty excited to look at that and go, wow, why should I buy this out? Everything looks good to me. What it doesn't say is certain aspects of the other side of the story, and this is not complete, but the significant increases in tuition that have come out just over the very recent past, up to the tune of about 250%, that approximately 55% of our students will not be shielded by financial aid. And also the significant contradiction of the principles of the master plan that continue to occur as we do this. I believe, and I would also ask, please, no applause, that's not what this is about for me either. It is possible that a tuition increase may prove unavoidable, but I come back as well to the question of timing. Giving a heads up to students and parents does not necessarily require that we offer a tuition buyout plan to the legislature. I, in fact, don't believe it is in the CSU's best interest to essentially offer to our elected officials tuition increases as an option, which then provides them with a rationale for continuing to underfund the university. I believe that we should ask for what we need without disclaimers. Let our elected officials take responsibility for the integrity or the lack thereof of the master plan, and let us not be complicit in compromising it by offering them a way out at the cost of our students.
Okay, thank you, Bernadette. Tom?
Thank you, Bill. Associate my remarks with the comments of the last three trustees. I know how frustrated and I believe angry we all are today to be here with these choices in front of us, forced on us by the legislature's lack of prioritization, lack of following the master plan, lack of clarity. And Chancellor, you appropriately pointed out we're in crisis. I mean, a 30% removal of our funding base by the state is a crisis. I will share with you, though, that I ran for office of superintendent, knowing that I'd also be a trustee and a regent, and with the support of tens of thousands of students who are upset by this continual escalation of fees, had promised to fight further to look at alternatives and look at other ways to do this and not let the legislature off the hook, making us an easy target by offering them this is an easy way out. They can lay it back on the Board of Trustees to take the heat for raising the fee when I think we need to put more heat on the legislature. So I'm here with these thoughts and some questions to pursue what I had promised the tens of thousands of students who supported me during the election season. And coming here over the months and
seeing with the, you know, the excruciating choices we're making and the tough details we're dealing with, you're looking, though, at, again, this question. My numbers come up 375% increase in tuition over the last 10 years. That's a big relative increase. And I think it's just unacceptable for the legislature, for the shifting the legislature's failure to support our state university onto the backs of the students. And the fees should be the very last of those that we resort to. In the last round of cutbacks forced by the legislature's failure to prioritize higher education funding, my calculations reflect that between 50 and 55% of the burden of absorbing those cuts fell on the students for the $650 million of damage that was done by the last budget. So I ask a few questions for us. Have we been as aggressive as we possibly can be in making our case to the legislature? We have over 2.5 million alumni across the state. They've been successful in their lives because they've fulfilled their dreams for an education. These California State University alumni have built their success upon a foundation of this great education that has been offered over the decades. I don't believe we've done enough to mobilize them, not just by the hundreds coming to the Capitol and to district offices of legislature, but by the thousands and tens of thousands. I think we should be mobilized in a much broader way in this upcoming budget deliberation the legislature will take on. We have over 400, well, we're down a bit from the height of 357,000. We have hundreds of thousands of students. Have we done enough to mobilize our students and their parents also in a concerted political effort to really change the thinking and bring home the reality to the legislatures? I have increasingly run into students, to businessmen and women who are, one woman from Fremont I met this weekend was livid at the fact that tuition's going up. She says, I pay my taxes, I have two kids ready to go to college, and I can't even get a guarantee that they'll be able to finish in 4 years or 4.5 years. It looks like with the kind of course cutbacks that they're going to need to take 5 years. And so we're increasingly, I think, seeing the public becoming aware of these tough choices that have been made and are ready to fight with us for the alternatives. And have we done enough to link arms with our higher education partners? I know we've tried, and we are working with UC and the community colleges, but how much more? Have we considered every administrative alternative to the fee increase? I'll give an example. Rather than create our own campus in Contra Costa, I was an advocate for many years for Contra Costa County State University. We decided instead, the collective wisdom was, instead of setting up a whole separate administrative branch, we'll combine with Cal State Hayward and created Cal State East Bay. So 30 miles apart, we had two campuses come together and share administration. Have we looked at similar consolidations of administration across other campuses that are 30 miles apart? And we know many of them you can think of as you look at the geography of the state. Could we save a significant number of dollars by combining that administration? And what are we promising the students in return? Every time the fees go up, are we doing anything to change the equation of getting back to a four-year degree schedule, having the counseling, having the key courses available to help students through? If they're going to get a fee increase at some point, what are we promising along with that? And have we urged the legislature to restore revenues? Californians today pay $13 billion less in taxes than we did in 1993. Just a few months ago, California taxpayers were paying $6 billion more. And we were only one vote short in the legislature. The governor made valiant efforts to get the votes. I believe we were one vote short in the Senate of a senator who could have created the two-thirds necessary to bring this matter to the public. So are we paying enough taxes? Have we even given the California voters a chance to debate that issue? And what is the stand of this Board of Trustees in asking the legislature put these measures in front of the voters of California? Or if you're not going to do that, will you allow higher education the authority to put measures ourselves, the collective boards of the trustees here and UC Regents and community college governors? Why don't we have the authority to put measures in front of the voters and say, do you want to restore, reinvest some of the taxes that used to be paid in California into higher education? It's a good investment, and we have a case to make for that. And are we ready to make that kind of a statement along with talking about the fee increases and this very thoughtful budget in terms of trying to accommodate the 20,000 more students. So again, I think we're making ourselves an easy target, the students an easy target by putting the fees out. I think I question not only is it the wrong direction, but the wrong timing. The new status quo seems to be a downward spiral. It's the normal rather than what we know is good for California students and good for our economy. So I urge a no vote.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
Oh, sorry. I think that we all have the opportunity to comment based on our perspective. And not to belabor the point, but to give you some of my perspective for a minute. As a community college product, one that was not proficient in English as a freshman, I can tell you that I understand the struggles that some of our students are facing. Getting a higher education degree for me was a pinnacle. It was something that I strived for, and I'm very proud to represent the alumni on this board, an alumni of 2 million strong. And I agree with the superintendent. Have we done enough? And the answer to all those questions, superintendent and colleagues, is no, we haven't. But we have decisions to make, and I reflect back on that July decision to increase, and Trustee Glazer, you're right, we have delayed those decisions at times, but those are, to me, the most painful, because it doesn't give our 23 leaders an opportunity to run their institutions in a way that is presentable and a way to make their business run. What concerns me, and I've shared this with some other colleagues, about how do we really put the pressure on the legislature? Because, I sat through the hearing with Trustee Monville and Actonberg, the Senate hearing on what our system is doing in our leadership. And I'm getting tired of getting beat up by a group of 121 people who basically passed the buck. The students will report later today that the buck starts somewhere. And it doesn't start here. It just ends here, where we begin taking the grief for inefficiency in our government. As a parent, I have two children that are products of this institution. And every time I voted for a student fee increase, guess who got to pay it? And I have the opportunity to talk to families through the parent associations that are oftentimes linked with their alumni. And what parents are most concerned about is unpredictability. And we give them when we delay decisions. And I hate with a passion to vote for fee increases. But I think we put ourselves in a position of delay, and it ruins the ability to plan. I know the legislature wants us to give a year's advance notice, which really at times shows me what are they thinking when they're in Sacramento. So I think that the outcome of this is to do what our chairman, Jeffrey Blash, said to us as he was departing. It's not time to form caricatures of our CEO. It's not time to divide this bench. It's time to unite. And time to tell the legislature this is what we need to operate this system. And if they're not going to act, then we have to show the leadership and make those tough, hard decisions. And I'm saying to you today, I hate like heck to make that decision, but I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Gavin?
Thanks. From my perspective, what we're debating fundamentally is a tax on the middle class and a tax on our future. If we don't invest in our future, we're simply not going to do very well there. And I think everyone around this table appreciates that and believes in that and understands that. And I certainly understand, Bob, your point about pressure. One thing, though, is clear to me, that we are absolving our opportunity to put pressure on the governor and the legislature by advancing and out, by supporting an increase, by doing exactly what Bernadette said, by giving them every excuse to focus on those other hungry mouths they need to feed up there. And I think that's defeatist. And I'm not in this city up here predictably, because you want to talk predictability. We've given absolute predictability to parents. I mean, they know invariably next year we'll be back with another tuition increase. Let's just dispense with any niceties. I mean, there's absolute predictability here as it relates to the state and it relates to the actions of this board to increase tuition and freeze. I think this is the ninth or tenth in the last 11 or 12 years. If I'm wrong, please correct me. And that's about as predictable as it gets. And I just think it's time for, as they say in psychology, a pattern interrupt. I mean, we're the old broken, or not a, I think that's a wrong metaphor. We're a record with grooves. And we need to scratch that record. Not even a broken record. We're as predictable as you possibly can be. This is ready, fire, aim. We're giving them an out. And I just think it's a terrible thing. And I also think, you know, with respect, you know, I've seen these slides. I've only been here 6 months. I've seen these slides five or six times in different incarnations. And I don't mean that, and I don't mean that to be dismissive or to be argumentative. I mean that to make a point. Again, there, you know, been there, done that. I get it. And frankly, Bernadette was right. It's what's missing that's more alarming. I mean, we just raised tuition 20% last year. That's not in here. We've tripled it, as Tom said, in the last decade. We've doubled it since 2007, roughly already. And we're not talking about tuition going to just shy of $6,000. You know, everyone knows better than that. I'm not sure the press has covered this.
Bernadette was right.
So it's missing.
That's more.
God help you all if you have to hear this twice.
We just raised tuition 20% last year. That's not in here.
I don't even want to hear it twice.
We've tripled it, as Tom said, in the last decade. We've doubled it since 2007, roughly already.
Yeah. Let me reemphasize.
Just shy of $6,000. You know, everyone knows better than that. I'm not sure the press is covering this.
Was right.
So it's missing. That's more.
God help you all.
We just raised tuition 20% last year. That's not in here.
I don't even want to hear it twice.
We've tripled it, as Tom said, in the last decade. We've doubled it since 2007, roughly already.
Yeah. Let me reemphasize.
Can't you cut it off?
Thank you. And here's the point, and I think it's important for people to know. The cost of education at CSU is not $6,000 a year. It's not even close to $6,000 a year. And with respect to this chart, the chart that drives me mad is this comparison chart. Because, I mean, if our argument is to be average, boy, that's not the California I grew up in. I mean, our debate shouldn't be about solvency. It should be about greatness. This university system is about greatness. And for us to compare ourselves, with all due respect to folks in Baltimore, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Texas, and Colorado, I love those states. But what I mean by that, to compare the actual cost of living in California to the cost of living and attending a university system in those states is an apple and an orange. The cost of living in California is substantially higher. The base sticker price may be relatively smaller, but the actual cost of education, I would argue, doesn't even come close to comparing ourselves with those examples. Just a perfect example, the on-campus cost at this Long Beach institution is over $23,000 a year. The cost is $20,000 to $25,000 a year to go to California State University. $20,000 to $25,000, not $5,472 now going up to $6,000. And if those numbers are wrong, you better change the numbers that you gave me. And my point of saying this is I don't want to compare ourselves to folks that we've never compared ourselves to just to justify a bad decision. You did a very good job today trying to justify a bad decision. This is the same conversations we're having at the UC system. And you know what? We put the brakes on a decision that was not too dissimilar to the decision that you're about to make today, where we decided not to do automatic increases proactively. And we paused and reflected on that because, as Steve says, the timing wasn't right to make a stronger case to the governor and the legislature that this is serious. One thing I guarantee you, if we do, we should expect exactly what we've got over and over and again. We'll reduce the pressure points. We have no leverage in this. Melinda's right. We need to lead We're that break between the actions in Sacramento and the realities on the campuses. This institution, we need to step up as trustees and lead. If not us, who? Seriously, there's no one left. So I think we should send a strong message and reject this. And I'll tell you, that will get the attention of folks up in Sacramento. I promise you, doing an increase won't get attention. Just gives them a free out. Makes it much easier to make bad decisions. I think we should reject this. I think we should have that dynamic conversation that I just haven't seen yet, that I know all of us are committed to, but we haven't demonstrated, that Tom talks about, in uniting in a completely different narrative for higher education, because you've just not seen it out there at all, Tom. You know this. And not just K-12, but higher ed. Conveyor belt for talent. The tentpole of our economy is this university system, and we're crushing it. We used to be able to get first-round draft choices. Now we can't get those either for a bunch of other reasons in this state. So I think we need to loudly and confidently and assuredly reject this increase and put our sights and attention in the next few months, not justifying it, but focusing it on the governor and the legislature that can do what Governor Schwarzenegger did in 2010 when they raised the amount of money they invested in this institution under not completely dissimilar circumstances. It is decisions, not circumstances. Decisions, not conditions, that will determine the fate and future of this university system. Let's make a good decision today under these difficult conditions and reject this tuition increase.
Okay, Herb. Thank you very much. I've heard and listened to my colleagues and to others about the issues before us at this time. And what I hear is that we want to pressure the legislature. We want to send a strong message back. We want to not send a message to parents and families about what likely could happen with respect to tuition early enough, in spite of the fact that when we did not do that before, a member of the CSU family sued us, caused us to have to spend extraordinary sums of money defending a reason why we didn't make a timely decision on when tuition should be raised. I have no good appetite for raising tuition and fees. That's not where I come from. That's not what I believe in. One of the things that makes the democratic process work well is that we offer respect to each other. I respect you. I ask you to do the same for me. Either respect or leave.
You're part of the problem.
Now, as I was about to say, it is possible that we could not make a decision today with respect to tuition, but it's also absolutely essential that we send a budget to the governor by December, mid-early December, for his consideration in drafting a budget for the state of California to be submitted in January. So what are the instructions as a board do we wish to give to our staff about the submission of that budget? If you do not include any statement with respect to fees, there will be nothing there. It will not be a part of the discussion in the governor's budget. So somehow we have to reconcile our displeasure about the inability or the unwillingness of the legislature and the governor to address these issues and how we send forth a budget for consideration as the governor builds his budget. As an old staff member, I think it's important to get good guidance from the policymakers and not lectures. We are telling people we don't like this and we don't like that, and we're not saying, and we're giving these vague comments about let's do this and let's do that. but we haven't provided any guidance to our staff. And that is an impossible position to be in. We must submit a budget. And I would ask this board, in the context of this committee or in the plenary session, to give a clear statement and directions to our staff about what we want them to do. And it just cannot be go pressure the legislature, go pressure the governor, let's do this and let's do that. We need more than that. So I just want to caution you that we're going to have to make a decision. And it has to go beyond the generalities that we've talked about so far.
Okay, anybody else? Henry, let's keep it to questions rather than...
Keep it to questions? I've been asking
statements.
Questions all afternoon.
Right.
Well, there's not much more I can say. I think my colleagues have said quite a bit, and they've said it nicely. I've been on this board now not that long, two, 3 years, and I voted on a couple of increases, and this time I've really sat back and actually thought about it. I think I've started the conversation amongst my colleagues because at this time I thought, for the same reasons everybody has said, you know, we're walking right into what the legislature wants. I go back to when I was confirmed. I did a real quick straw poll with everybody I talked to up there in Sacramento, and almost every one of the legislators I talked to either came from the UC system or the Cal State system. So I'm baffled why they have abandoned us, and I don't understand it. And for me to keep voting yes, I feel like I'm rubber stamping what we're doing. And every time they cut us, we raise tuition. And I think we, as everybody has said, we have to stop that cycle. I know it hurts. That's why I keep asking the questions, you know, what is included and what is included. I don't understand also, to me it's counterintuitive. I'm a CPA. Why we're increasing, you know, the students coming in, the 20,000 students, if we can't afford it. Obviously it brings in more revenue, but then at the same time it's a vicious cycle, I think. And I think at some point in time we have to stop it. So, you know, probably to the chagrin of everybody here, I don't know who, I'm not sure I can support another increase. I think at some point in time we have to stop this train and now go back to the legislators and say, here's where we're at, and we're going to suffer. I mean, we talked about, I think when we asked the question, there'd be layoffs, et cetera. Well, I mean, be as it may, I think at some point in time we have to stop it. But I just don't understand the increase. I don't understand... you know, I say at some point in time we have to tighten our belts and move forward with what we have. So I'm going to lay it out there. I don't support another increase. So I just want to make sure that's clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Anybody else?
All right, Pete. Then Singh, and then Bernadette.
Is it my understanding that if under our proposal, then we will indeed abandon our mission of access and limit enrollment? Is that essentially correct?
Say that again.
I'll try to be a little clearer. In other words, if we don't get these, the tuition increase or the state doesn't fund us, then we will be faced with a predicament in terms of our enrollment for next year.
Yes.
In other words, we will, one of our prime missions as a board is to have access to our institution. And if we, in fact, I'm wondering if this same group, I, like you, Melinda, am a first of my family to go to college. If it wasn't for the CSU system, I don't know where I would be. Both my daughters are graduates of the CSU system. We had to pay the tuition, that middle class, every time it came, we paid. But what we were getting for it was a bargain. I'm wondering if all the people who at this point will be here when I have to tell, as a trustee, no, you can't come to this institution. Now, a lot of people are making a lot of assumptions that you know what we do, that you're not doing enough in terms of to leverage the legislature and the governor's office. How dare you not know what I do in terms of how we effectively lobby? But it becomes politically expedient when students are against it to pander to you and say, oh, we're against it. But I, as a trustee, am going to vote for this, even though, like many of my other trustees, I have a fiduciary obligation to keep the doors of this great institution, the people's institution, open. And if you all would be here to tell that student, no, I got mine, you can't come in. Now, if I really believed, Lieutenant Governor, that this would send a clear message to the legislators that they better do something about this, they hear this message loud and clear. They hear it, they know, the governor knows, the legislature knows, but when I see the disproportionate amount of cuts we took when the prisons and the prison guards didn't get it, this is disingenuous. And when I see the voters of California, we have gone before the voters, and they have turned us down in terms of funding for higher education or for government. And so the fault, dear Caesar, lies not in the stars, but on we collectively. And as painful as it is, I'm going to vote for this student increase. I wish there was different ways of doing this, but I also will work hard to make sure that the governor and the legislature get the message to buy us back, because we'll find out whether or not they really are committed to higher education.
Okay. Singh? Today we are going to make a tough decision, and actually among all the trustees, I don't think we have any disagreement. No one likes to increase the tuition. No one likes to limit the access. But we face this situation. I think it's more how we, among all the this enrollment, we find the best thing. I just want to pledge to all the trustees. Today I think the most important thing is we have a unanimous decision. We have to be together, and then we can go to the next step to try to solve that problem. Yes, thank you.
Okay, Bernadette.
In response to Chair Carter's comments, indeed, I agree that some more specific suggestions in terms of courses of action are necessary. I did mention when I was speaking that I believe that we should ask for what we need without disclaimers. And what I meant by that is to just remove the suggestion that there would be a buyout of tuition fee increase and all of the rationale, all of the arguments for, you know, that they could use to say, oh, yeah, let's do that. Great idea. And then ask for what we need. Add that $138,348,000. Make sure that that amount is there without the option of a buyout. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, Herb.
Would that then mean that if we ask and do not get it, and that decision will be made in June to July, some point at that point in time, is it then the position of this board that we would be supporting a cap or rollback in enrollment? That's the logical outcome of that process.
Herb, I mean, I agree with what Bernadette has said. Let's tell them what we think it costs to fund the CSU system for the next calendar year. I don't think we have to make the business decision today that if they don't fund us at our levels, that we're capping enrollment or that we're going to increase fees or not or whatever. We will revisit that once we know what the playing field is. But in terms of what we propose to them in our budget, let's tell them all the things that we know to be true about what California needs, what we think our system needs, et cetera, without regard to the out that people have been describing in terms of the fees. And I think that's important. And with all due respect, Peter, I mean, since you mentioned my name, yes, I'm first generation college. I'm proud. My oldest sister went by accident, and the rest of us followed. I was a Cal Grant A recipient. All of the kids in my family went to UC Davis. My dad was, you know, they didn't know anything about college. Our second generation has started at UC Berkeley, UC Davis, Sac State, and San Francisco State. I have one who's applying this fall, and I've told him it's going to be a tough road because he may not get into any of our campuses, and I'm not making a decision that will impact him because I believe that we have to look longer term. And the crisis that we're looking at today isn't about the fall of 2012. It's a long-term issue that affects California's long-term economic future. So let's present a budget that we think is realistic for what we need to invest in California's CSU system, and then make a business decision later once we have additional information about what it may mean, because it may not mean that we're going to cap enrollment. It might. It also might mean that we're going to implement the very fee increases that you've asked for today, but we don't want to do that in advance. And I understand that the committee will be voting first, and then the board will vote secondly. I'm not on the committee, but if I was, I would be voting no as presented unless we were to revise it. Thank you.
Okay. Lou.
Yeah, I would encourage my colleagues to go back to the fundamental question that our chair has raised, and that's one of timing. While I understand and appreciate the Lieutenant Governor's argument about our predictability, I'm worried about the 55%. 45% of our students aren't going to see this, but 55%, if they do, will at some point. And at what point do we tell them, and are you willing to take the risk that they will make the assumption and plan and prepare accordingly to support their students and or their families if we fail to act? That's a big risk in my mind. So I come back to the body and ask, if this is not the direction and the message that we're going to send, which, by the way, I think is clear to the legislature, they're now being given a choice. You can either fully fund us or we're going to implement a fee increase. If we're going to maintain our mission of access, which I think we absolutely should, I mean, you heard me yesterday beating on the 1440 drum. I certainly don't want to be back here with my colleagues this spring talking about, okay, we've fought tooth and nail to get an AA transfer degree, and now let's choose which ones of those transfers we're going to accept. So if we're going to maintain our mission of access, then I ask the question, at what point do we tell the 55% what choice we may have to make? If it's not today, when is it? And then are we prepared for the impending lawsuit for if we do that in June or July or August? And I ask that you take that into consideration before you cast your vote.
Okay, have we exhausted this?
Yeah.
Roberta, did you?
Roberta.
All right, Roberta, and then Steve.
We have an institution to run here, and we have an obligation to run it well. I think we have an obligation to students to apprise them of what we believe it's going to cost, absent intervention by the legislature, because if anything's predictable, it is predictable that the legislature will not adequately fund us. For in order to adequately fund us, they'd have to agree to increase income taxes on California's wealthiest, and I think they won't agree to do that, although I think they should. I think they won't agree to close Proposition 13's corporate property tax loophole, which I think they should, and if they were to, we might have enough resources to properly fund this institution. I don't disagree with making the banks pay. In fact, if there were a way, and look, I mean, I'm going to vote for this tuition increase. I should have said that in the beginning, and that's because as a trustee, I believe we have an obligation to make this institution run properly. I think participation in the CSU and the UC and even in the community colleges should be free of charge. It was free of charge when I went to university as a first-generation college student. I got a Class A education, and we had to pay $200 a year for the privilege. If there were a way to make that possible again, I would be all for it. I would support any ballot measure that restores the promise of public higher education to the state of California, because I think that's what made the state great. As a private citizen, I would do all of those things. As a trustee, I agree with my colleagues. I think we have a fiduciary duty. I don't believe that the legislature and the governor, and I want to underscore the governor, I don't believe that he does not understand what these kind of disproportionate cuts mean to public higher education. I don't believe it. Yet we have an obligation to run this institution properly. I'm going to vote for this tuition increase. It is the last thing in the world that I want to do. You can respect that or disrespect that. I couldn't care less. But what I could care most about is preserving this institution and fighting for what we need, where it can make some difference. Fighting among ourselves is not going to properly fund the CSU.
Okay, thank you, Roberta. Steve?
Yeah, thank you. I think Chair Carter, in his typical thoughtful way, has focused us on what's most important here for this committee and for the board, and that's to give some very pragmatic direction to staff, who has done an excellent job in all the materials and presentations that they provided to us today and prior to the meeting. So I want to be very pragmatic about it. There's a published account this morning that says our deficit for the coming year is more than $13 billion. It's not like anything's going to change much. And the challenge for me and the choice that's before us is that I'd like to be in a position to be able to judge the issue of tuition versus other consequences. And I feel like that choice is really not what's before us right now. If I had the choice of enrollment increases or tuition, I might make a different choice today as I would make in June or July. But what troubles me is the irreversibleness of the choices that we have today. And what I heard from staff is that tuition, a decision by this committee and this board on tuition is something that it may be an inevitability, but we have some kind of choice down the road. But the choice of enrollment growth is one that I think is not reversible, and that's what worries me about what's before us. Are we going to say that we're going to support a 5% enrollment growth, which is these decisions that are being made, you know, within weeks? And that's what troubles me. I wish that it had been teed up in a more robust way for us to talk about it. I think staff's done a good job of raising some of the consequences of it, but it seems to me that if the taxpayers and the legislature are not going to fund the system, that we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and taking the enrollment growth, which the master plan says we should and philosophically we all want to do, and yet we don't have the money to pay for it. And yet if we make this decision today and there is that enrollment growth, when it comes to paying the piper in the spring or summer based on what the legislature and the governor provided us, it's that we can't reverse that. We've already taken that enrollment. And so that's what worries me the most about the choice before us, is that I'm questioning whether or not we should allow our system to grow any more without a greater confidence that we have the resources to pay for it. And that's not a choice I want to make. But I voted for the tuition increase in July, and I could very well vote for a tuition increase again this year. But I just think that the choices aren't necessarily teed up at this point in time for that. And more importantly, I think we should pause very carefully and say, do we really want to keep growing the system's enrollment when it's not reversible, when those resources most likely don't come our way in the summer.
Thank you, Steve.
I know you need to go, Mr. Chairman.
But Governor, I know you're on the list. I just want to say to my colleagues, I believe that the decision with respect to enrollment must be made by January. I have to ask my presidential colleagues out there, what is the time frame in which they must make decisions about whether or not students are going to be accepted into their university? Somebody just, one of you give me a hand here.
Well, it is January. And we've got to make the plan. And I guess just to share kind of the position that we're in, with year after year of decreases, most of us have, as a result of the $100 million cut, will have exhausted our reserves. So that we have got to be very, very careful in managing our enrollment for next year. Otherwise, we run the potential disaster having more students and saying to them, we do not have enough classes for you.
Okay. Governor?
No, great. I wanted just to pick up. Steve said exactly what I wanted to say more eloquently than I could. He hit the nail on the head. We weren't given choices here. We were given a limited frame. And that, from my perspective, is my frustration. You said it's an either-or. And with respect, I don't believe we've substantively explored other options. I mean, as a trustee, I would love to be given more options, and we're not afforded that. Second, let's ask for what we need, not for what we think we can get, which was Bernadette's point and Melinda's point. And I think that's right. I think it's a low bar if we're just going after what we think we might possibly be able to get. And so I just think, even with the buyout, by the way, we don't even get what we're not even getting what we need, which is something we need to remind ourselves. And final point, access, access, access. But to whom? There's no access that's being advanced here for the middle class and working families. Quite the contrary. They're being denied access yet again because of the cost increases that we're burdening them with. And so I respect, I think it's an extraordinary thing what this system in UC does for low-income folks, and I'm not suggesting for a second we abandon that commitment. But boy, is it deplorable what we've done in this system for the middle class. And we're creating not just a barbell economy outside this institution, but now within this institution. And so the issue of access, I think, also needs to be broadened in terms of its discussion and debate.
Okay, thank you, Governor. We have, I think we have exhausted this. Is there anybody that feels compelled to have to say anything more? All right. This is the Finance Committee, as I believe Melinda pointed out. So those people who are members of the Finance Committee are eligible to vote at this time. Obviously, we will have the plenary session very shortly thereafter, and this debate and discussion has essentially been the kind of debate and discussion we would have had in the plenary session. So the first question here is a motion on Agenda Item 3, which authorizes the staff to submit the 2013 General Fund Support Budget in the form in which it has been presented to the committee. All right, it is moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. All right. The second item. All right. If you want a roll call, we'll do a roll call. All right. Lou.
Aye.
Roberta.
Aye.
Steve.
No.
Singh.
No.
Bob.
Yes.
And Hauk. Yes. So that motion carries. Sorry, Henry. Okay, no. Motion still carries. It's 4-3.
Is that the end of your committee?
No, we need We have one more. Item four is related to three. It's related to graduate. If you look in the in your agenda book, agenda item four relates to fees for graduate programs. I believe there are three of them. And what I'd like to do is approve those, or have them considered at least, in one motion under the resolutions in agenda item four. They relate to the doctorate in education. They relate to the doctorate in nursing practice programs, and there's one other one that I'm forgetting, I think. I believe it's physical therapy.
There's no action recommended on physical therapy,
okay,
so it's those,
so it's just
two
the
doctorates.
The education doctorate and the doctorate
practice.
In nursing practice.
Yes.
So is there a motion to
approve the undergraduate student tuition fee?
Or the undergraduate?
Well,
he's trying to.
All right, it's three. I was assuming we approved that with the submission of the budget, but it's also the third piece would be the undergraduate tuition fees that we just approved as a committee anyway in support of submitting the budget to the governor and ultimately to the legislature. And that schedule reflects the increase. Reflects the fee increase. Is there a motion to approve those items that are contained within agenda item four? I move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's moved and seconded. We'll do another roll call if you'd like. All right, those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right, let's do a roll call. Get back to my... All right, Lou?
Aye.
Roberta? All right, Steve?
No.
Singh?
No.
Bob? And Henry? And Hauk? Yes. So that motion carries as well. And I believe that concludes the Finance Committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Trustee Hauk. The